Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Sunday, October 9th. Welcome to the show, everyone. As always, if you're calling in with a question or comment, you would call us at 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. Thank you guys for tuning in tonight. Thank you for those who will listen on the playback. And we want to say a special hello to all of our friends around the world. Thank you guys for tuning in and listening on the playback. We also just want to let those people know who are in the North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida areas that we're all, you know, praying for you all, as well as those in Haiti and Cuba and anywhere that was affected by Hurricane Matthew. Just want you all to know that we are praying for you guys. Again, tonight's show is breaking into the film and TV industry as a makeup artist. Some of the things that we may talk about tonight may even apply to those of you listening who are hairstylists, but our focus tonight is on the makeup side of the industry. And I'm going to turn it over to my sister Denise so she can greet you and in her own way and share some beauty news and just a special hello to those of you who have tuned in from Philadelphia. I see you on the line. Welcome to the show. Good evening, everyone. And again, welcome to Beauty Talk and welcome to the beauty news. Again, thank you all for joining us. So we'll get right to it. Very briefly, I wanted to just kind of repeat some news that I gave a couple of weeks ago about the North American Hairstyling Awards. I know I gave out quite a few of the categories, but tonight I just want to give general information once again, and I'm probably going to repeat it a few more times this year until the entry process has actually started. Just want to give this information so that you are aware, and if you're interested in competing at the NAHA Awards for next year, then you would just probably need to listen to this information very carefully and follow the instructions that I'm going to give you. But the North American Hairstyling Awards, as known as NAHA, is owned and operated and managed by the Professional Beauty Association, which is known as PBA. The North American Hairstyling Awards is the most prestigious photographic beauty competition in North America. Held during PBA Beauty Week, each year NAHA honors the professional salon industry's most talented and cutting-edge artists in 15 distinct categories of excellence. And some NAHA entry tips, you can be sure to visit probeauty.org / enter NAHA, so it's enter NAHA, and check out the resources available to help you prepare for your NAHA entry. In addition to the NAHA tips, videos, and PDFs that you'll see, you can watch an insider's guide to NAHA, PBA's three-part webinar series featuring past NAHA winners and finalists and judges sharing their expert advice and tips for a successful NAHA entry from start to finish. To enter NAHA and review all rules, regulations, and eligibility requirements, you can visit again probeauty.org/ enter NAHA. That's enter NAHA, probeauty.org/ enter NAHA. Now, some of the 2017 NAHA timeline dates are as follows. The entry process opens up December 1st, 2016. Again, December 1st of this year is when the entry process will actually open, and you can go ahead and submit your photos for entry. And it's online-only submissions. Again, it's online-only submissions. The entry deadline will be February 10th. And that's why I'm giving out the information repeatedly for the remainder of the year. The entry deadline is February 10th. Finalists will be announced and notified on May 10th of next year. And the NAHA Awards Ceremony will take place July 9th of 2017 during Pro Beauty Week. So, again, the entry process opens up December 1st, and it closes on February 10th of next year. So, again, for more information and to get the rules and regulations, go to probeauty.org/ enter NAHA. Now, one of my favorite reports, I did this once last month, I believe it was, but in the American Salon magazine, we have Nina Kovner. She's a beauty industry veteran and the chief awesomeness empowerer at Passion Squared, which is her company that empowers business owners and artists. And she shares in each American Salon magazine her little tidbits on social media. So I would just like to share a little bit of that for this month. So for social beauty, she's asking, are you team Instagram stories or are you team Snapchat? I know when Snapchat was out, everybody kind of got used to Snapchat, and then all of a sudden Instagram came up with their stories, which was a direct, you know, copy of Snapchat. But I think people started to catch on a little bit with the Instagram stories. And you know, so people decide, you know, if they like one better than the other or if they just decide to, you know, to do them both. So she says, are you team Instagram stories or team Snapchat? It says, whether on Instagram stories or Snapchat, awesome brands should share stories. These stories inspire people and help them take action with your business. They click, book, call, and email. Snapchat taught us how to share 10-second stories, raw and unedited. Now, Instagram stories has opened up a whole new audience to a similar form of storytelling. Here are a few of the most common questions received from the digital community since Instagram stories launched. The first question is, will Instagram stories replace Snapchat? So Nina responds, I seriously doubt it. We must remember that both platforms will change and grow. While this is a huge move for Instagram and their audience, there is still so much opportunity for Snapchat and their audience. Question number two, should I do Instagram stories, Snapchat, or both? She responds, as I always say, be where your clients are, and that is so important. Because a lot of times people may have more followers and friends on Instagram than they do Snapchat, so I agree with that. Be where your clients are. It's not about the platform. It's about how you craft valuable stories, the way you choose to tell a story, and where your clients are most happy consuming those stories. Question number three, what should I share on Instagram stories? Your content is your marketing. Go back to your brand story and your audience's values and connect the two. Play around with different types of content, measure it, and adjust as needed. Try product how-tos and tips behind the scenes in the salon, or client shout-outs and features. So if you want to see how Nina is storytelling on Instagram and Snapchat, you can follow her at Passion Squared on both of those platforms, at Passion Squared. So I thought I would share that. I thought that was interesting because you get that question all the time, you know, team Instagram stories or team Snapchat. I say do both.
Right.
Absolutely. And one last thing that I have, for those of you out there who's using StyleSeat, which I'm using StyleSeat as well, StyleSeat is an app pretty much that allows makeup artists, hairstylists, estheticians, you know, individual beauty technicians to kind of display their work as well as display their services with prices and to book appointments. But one featured attraction to StyleSeat now is that StyleSeat is now open to salons for the first time, with salon technicians, services, and availability being featured alongside independent stylists. That's a great feature. With a client base of nearly 10 million, the world's largest marketplace for beauty services helps maintain a stylist client base and schedule while providing them with the marketing tools to attract new businesses. Now, I'm wondering, StyleSeat is free, but they do have a paid option. So I'm not sure if the option for the salons is a paid option or not. But you do have an option as an independent stylist for a free account or a paid account. While you'll love it, StyleSeat automates and streamlines the business of beauty so artists can focus on their craft. Each user is provided a personal dashboard to view sales, booked appointments, and upcoming deposits. Features like Express Pay, which requires clients to provide a credit card ahead of time so stylists never miss a payment. 24/7 online and mobile booking and automated marketing text to remind clients to book upcoming appointments make it easy to maintain a consistent stream of loyal clients. So I thought I would share that little tidbit because I think that's great that they've opened it up now to salons. Absolutely. And just wanted to share a few things myself. The virtual brows, the virtual stylist lash and brow app recently added its much anticipated virtual brows feature. So it was at one time it was just for lashes, the lash extensions. Now they've added brows to that. The app works like a magic mirror, so clients can virtually try on various styles and lengths of lash extensions and now brows. For artists who already own the app, the free update is now available on iTunes. So make sure you go to iTunes to get your updates, or if you haven't done it at all, to check it out. And then lastly, I just wanted to mention a couple of winners of the 2016 Lash Wars competition that was held during the International Beauty Show June 24th through 27th at the Las Vegas Convention Center. They say 50 pro lashers descended on Vegas in June to compete in the third annual Lash Wars. So it's only been going on for 3 years. And it's North America's largest competition for eyelash extension artists, which I think is a great thing that they have a competition for eyelash extension artists. It's not a game. It's serious business during this competition. And for the second year in a row, Eva Zacharias of Illusions Beauty Concepts in Canada snagged first place in the fantasy category with the help of Spanish makeup artist Maria Herrera. So what happens is that they have a theme, and this year it was inspired by Alice in Wonderland, and Eva does the eyelash extensions, and then Maria, the makeup artist, completes the makeup look for this theme. And let's see here. They did a full body paint headdress. Sorry about that, guys. They did a full body paint on the model, as well as a headdress and wings with a butterfly spilling diamonds into a flower on the model's deep purple lashes. So when I saw the picture, it was really actually really really pretty. And I haven't seen any other contestants that competed against them what their model looked like, but they were the first place winners for the second year in a row. Who else won something here? Liz Bussey, who is the owner of Glow Lashes in Vernon, British Columbia, Canada, won first place in the classic category. She competed in the volume category last year, even though she wasn't really completely ready. But she took criticism from last year's competition and used that to come in first place this year in the classic category. Sophia Knuckles, who's studio manager at Deka Lash in McCurry, Pennsylvania, took the top prize in the volume category. And this was a repeat of her win at Lash Wars New York in 2015. I had no idea that there was a Lash Wars New York. I always thought that it happened in Vegas, so I need to pay more attention to that. But she was the winner in the volume category. So there's a classic category, a volume category, and a fantasy category.
Man, this
I would
awesome.
Really love. Exactly. So I really would love to see. Maybe I need to do some research, and because I would love to visually see what that looked like for everyone. And then Miranda Bowie, she's the owner of Mirror Aesthetics in Anchorage, Alaska. She won second place fantasy, but she said it was an honor to come in second next to Eva. She says, because Eva is a pro and extremely talented, and I couldn't be happier with our team's effort. So I'd like to find out more information on that, but that sounds really, really exciting. I would love to see that competition. I don't know any details, you know, as far as the time limits that they had. I just know that there was a fantasy. Well, just for the fantasy category, it was Alice in Wonderland. I don't know how the other categories work, if they have a makeup artist that joins, or is that just for the fantasy? I'm not really sure. So I have to do a little more research on that. But visually, if I find pictures, I will post them on the Beauty Talk Facebook page and the Beauty Talk Instagram page. That would be kind of exciting to see. So just wanted to share that. But again, tonight's conversation is breaking into the film and TV industry as a makeup artist. Again, if you're a hairstylist listening, you know, some of this information may apply to you. But again, tonight we're focusing on the makeup artist. Both my sister and I have been makeup artists now for 19 years, and most of that time we have been working in film and television. And as you can see, that long in film and television, it's a love for us. We really like it. We really enjoy it, but it is hard work. And tonight we just wanted to share a few things about doing makeup for film and television, you know, just giving you some basics, but just also putting this out there to you for those of you who are in the Atlanta area or who, you know, live close or can get to the Atlanta area. We will be having a class coming up, and we'll give you further details on it once we work all the details out. Excuse me. But we will be having a class here in the Atlanta area on film and TV, being a makeup artist for the film and TV industry, as well as we have a invitation-only retreat-style class that we're going to be doing in Orlando. And we'll be giving you more details on that. But I will say, for those
actually,
who feel
Fort
like...
Lauderdale.
I'm sorry,
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, for Fort Lauderdale. For those who are interested and feel like they, you know, want to be invited to this event, you can send us an email at the radio show's email address, which is beautygirlsmedia@gmail.com. You can send us an email and share some information about yourself, resume, website, how long you've been doing makeup, pictures, whatever it is you want to share, and tell us why you would like to be invited to that particular class in Fort Lauderdale. It's going to be a retreat. It's more, you know, it's going to be a couple of days, and it'll be in Fort Lauderdale. So this is a couple things that we have planned. Let me go back and say this. When you were talking about sending in the pictures, you know, if you don't do makeup for film and TV, but you are a makeup artist and you're interested in doing makeup for film and TV, don't feel like you have to have pictures of yourself doing makeup on film and television, or pictures of makeup that you did for a film or TV project. Because if you don't have that experience yet, how are you going to be able to send me a picture of that? So just send pictures of your work. So if you don't have film and TV experience, just send pictures of your work, and then we can take it from there. Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, most of the people who would probably be coming to this, who will be invited to this, some of them will be people who don't have film and television experience at all. So don't think it's a prerequisite for this,
right,
to be invited. You don't have to have film and television experience. There will be some people who've had a little film and television experience, and they want to go further. They want to know what the next step is. And so it's going to be people of all levels. The only prerequisite that you need is an interest in film and television, a strong interest in doing makeup in the film and television industry. That's the only prerequisite.
Right.
So absolutely. One of the things that I wanted to start the conversation off with tonight is just kind of some do's and don'ts of a makeup artist who wants to become a makeup artist in the film and television industry. And one of the things I would say, starting off first, if you are someone, you've become a makeup artist, and you're doing all types of makeup. Because I know when I first became a makeup artist, I was doing photo shoots, I was doing weddings, I was doing independent film and local television, private public affairs television. So you may be all over the place, like how I started. But if you're interested in film and television and you're doing all of those things, don't stop doing those things just to focus on film and television. Continue to do your weddings. Continue to do your photo shoots. And if you have a, quote, regular job, continue to do that. I would strongly suggest continuing to do that. You know, it really depends on where you live in the country. You have to wonder, if there's a lot of film and television in your area, where you could really pursue it. where there's a lot of independent films or even features going on in your area, and you can pursue it more, that would be great. But if you live in an area where there's not a lot of film and television work happening, definitely don't quit your job. I would work out some type of plan, figure out what you're going to do. I would try to figure out, if I'm going to move, or maybe the town, a town close by, with maybe let's say within 45 minutes to an hour that you can get to easily, has all the film and television work. Come up with a plan. But I definitely would not quit my regular job at once just to pursue it. This is just my opinion, and I'm going on my experience. But I would have a plan. I would work out a plan and just kind of have an idea of how to go about it before just saying, okay, I'm going to do film and television, I'm going to quit my job. That wouldn't be a great idea. Also, another thing, if you're interested in doing film, and not just film and television, but just makeup in general, first, let's not go out, start buying all expensive products, all, big
right.
name brand cosmetics to fill your kit. There's a lot of people who come out of makeup school and they think, I have to have all MAC, and then I want some NARS, and then I want, everything makeup forever. It's okay to have those products, but I wouldn't spend all of my money trying to fill my kit with all of those products. If you're interested in film and television, try to learn about the products that a lot of film and television artists use. Of course we use MAC and NARS and Makeup Forever, you know, and all those brands. But think about, you know, just try to learn and think about what we're using besides those things and why we use certain things, why I may use a certain type of foundation from Makeup Forever, you know, why I use a particular powder from MAC. It's not just about filling up my kit with all of these fashion colors and things and popular brands. So be smart about that, I would suggest. And I'll share this. When I first started out in the film and television world, I was working on independent films with another makeup artist. And, you know, she had a well-stocked kit, but she's been in the business for years. And what I did was I would look at her kit, and I would take notes, mental notes and written notes. And I would ask her questions. What's that product? I saw something that I'd never seen before. What's that product? And she would tell me, and she would tell me what it was used for. And I would just write things down and make notes. So then when you have all of these makeup trade shows coming to your area, or you go to the area where these makeup trade shows are, before you start just buying stuff, go back to some of those notes and make great decisions as to what you need to start putting in your kit. Sometimes you're going to buy a certain product that maybe you wrote a note about and you don't know what to really do with it, but you know that this is what goes into a film and TV makeup artist's kit, and you'll have it. So when you start doing the film and TV work, you'll already have the product. So
right.
Just be very careful about how you stock your kit. And there's nothing wrong with, and you all have seen it yourself, there's nothing wrong with some of the cheaper brand products. Like now people, like at one time there was, what is that? It's at the tip of my tongue. You used to buy it like at Ulta and some of the, I forget the name of the brand, at the drugstores, but now they're big. You know, when you see them at beauty shows, they have this big, elaborate booth. And
NYX?
Around the booth. Thank you. I couldn't think of that name. NYX. You know what I mean? So, you know,
or
like some people at one time. NYX. Yeah, or NYX, yeah. At one time, a lot of people thought of them, you know, didn't think of them as a big brand or what have you, but they had great products, and I loved them because a lot of their shadows and blush colors were very pigmented. So, you know, you can fill your kit up with various brands. Another thing I would suggest that you don't do is if you do find yourself on a set, whether it's a feature film or whether it's an independent, is not to be. Especially, I've seen this on independents before. Don't be on movies or television sets where you get up and you leave because you're just ready to go. You know, sometimes, and not sometimes, all the times, they are long days. You know, your average day is anywhere from 12 to 16 hours. Definitely, you know, a good 12-hour day is average. You know, there's been a lot of makeup artists who, you know, they want to be in this so bad, but then once they get in and they see how long that you're there, they don't realize that you're there for a long time. You just can't get up and leave, or get up and leave to go somewhere and do something and then come back. That's not the type of job that film and television work is. So it's just a couple things I kind of wanted to throw out there off the top of my head that you don't want to do. Can you think of any other things that you should not do?
Oh, there's a lot, but I guess that would be part of like set etiquette.
Exactly.
There's just a lot of things that we could probably get in. You know, like taking photos of actors on your personal cell phones. I know nowadays people, you know, in hair and makeup departments, they actually do that. Instead of using a normal camera, And instead of, you know, they actually just use their cell phones. But I think it's kind of getting out of hand because I've worked on certain shows where in the makeup department, every single makeup artist takes pictures of, you know, whether it's the principal actors or whether it's the background. Everybody's taking pictures and they're sending it to one particular person in the makeup department, but yet they still have those photos on their phones. So if you're taking pictures of, you know, the principal actors, you know, those things can end up on somebody's, you know, Instagram page later on or something. So I just think as a makeup department head or whoever's responsible for continuity in the makeup department, they should have one camera that's to be used to take pictures of everybody, or they themselves, if they're going to take photos on their cell phones, then they should be the only person responsible for taking photos. I think that's going to end up turning into a big issue with taking photos on personal cell phones. But again, like I said, yeah, that you know, that could be in the list of a whole bunch of other things in set etiquette. What I would like to talk about, which I think is very important for, you know, for people who are interested in breaking in, there are just some very simple things that you need to do and that you need to do well. And that very first thing that I would like to bring up is your resume. You must have a professional resume if you're going to work in this business. A lot of people who have done some film work or some television work, whether it be commercials, music videos, actual sitcoms or things like that, or whether it's web series or whatever they've done, you know, they have an IMDb page. Everybody knows what IMDb is now. It's the Internet Movie Database. And so now, most of the time, well, from the very beginning when IMDb came around, most of the information that went on to IMDb came from actual productions. So if whatever movie was being shot, that production gave information to IMDb, like their whole, like, crew, gave them their whole crew list. And so IMDb would put that on each individual person's own profile page. Now on IMDb, you're able to go in, make changes to your page. You're able to add stuff, you know, delete stuff or what have you. So what I would suggest is not to use your IMDb page as your resume. Yes, producers do look at that. They really do. But I think it's very important to make sure that IMDb page is accurate, to make sure it's up to date, so that it has all of your current, you know, your current work on it. But even if you don't have an IMDb page, or if you do, it's very, very important to have a resume. As a professional, you should always have a resume. You're going to always need that 1 to 2 page pieces of paper to represent you. And it's very important to make sure you include, you know, all of the work that you've done in film and television, if that's the type of work you're trying to get. That's what we're talking about tonight, film and TV. It's important to put all of your film and TV work on your resume. I think if you do, you know, like print stuff, fashion, you know, that's not necessarily the place to put that work. You could probably have 2 different resumes, or however many resumes you need to have to get certain jobs. But if you're trying to get a film and television job, it's very important to just focus on film and TV. So have a resume specifically for film and television and put all of your work experience on there. Even if you don't have much work experience, but you've taken certain classes that would include certain special skills, let's say you took let's say you went to Joe Blasco and you took a makeup course, then put that on there as part of your education. You know, so you want to have that on there. If you specialize in doing ball caps or special effects, then make sure you put that on your resume in a certain section that it says, you know, specialty or special skills. so that when the producer sees your resume, okay, they know, okay, this is what he or she can do. And it's you know, it's listed on your resume, it's detailed on your resume, and that's all you need to represent you, to say, this is who I am, this is what I can do. Please make sure that when you're creating your resume, that you're only listing the work that you actually did, not the work of somebody else. You cannot take credit for someone else's work. If you worked on a show and the makeup department head did Halle Berry's makeup, but she had to go back to the trailer to do someone else, and she left you on set, and she wanted you to touch up Halle, you know, whenever Halle needed touch-ups. You touched up Halle, you know, you gave her some powder, you gave her a little concealer under the eye, gave her more lipstick, you gave her more blush. That's all great. That was a part of your job for the day. That's what the department had asked you to do. But you cannot put on your resume that you did Halle Berry's makeup, because you didn't. You just touched her up. I don't care if you redo her whole face, like, you know, go in and touch up every single thing on her face. You cannot say that you did Halle Berry's makeup. You did not create that look. That's not your work. Even if you change something on Halle's face, if you change something about her look, you cannot take credit for doing her makeup. But so many people are so hungry, and they're looking for any little thing to make themselves look like they're more than what they are, to make themselves look like more than what they are on that resume, that they will do that. They will steal somebody else's work and put it on their resume, and that's a no-no. I'm sure there have been tons of people who've actually gotten jobs on lies, but that stuff always catches up with you. It will always catch up with you, so don't do it. Don't do it. If you don't have the experience, guess what? Eventually you will get the experience. So there's no need to lie. There's no need to cheat. Just do the work. Continue to do the work. Whatever you do, list that on your resume, and slowly but surely that resume will build. I promise you, once you get the first thing on your resume, that will get you the next thing. Once you get that, that will get you the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, until before you know it, you're going on to your second page on your resume. So take the time to do the work. Keep your resume updated. Keep your IMDb page updated. If you have a website, which I strongly suggest as a makeup artist, to get a website, because that's where you can kind of, you know, everything that you do as a makeup artist can be listed on that website, whether it's fashion, print, film, TV, all of that can be listed on that website. So that's the place for everything, to show all of your work. Then you can also, on that website, you can kind of give a portion of your resume, whether you want to do the whole entire resume or just, you know, maybe just list the movies and television projects you did. That's fine. Or list all of the clients that you worked with, that's fine as well. But that's the place to put all of that, on that website. So make sure that everything is current, your website, your IMDb page, and your resume. They should all match your resume. Any thoughts?
I totally agree. And when you mentioned, you know, if you just touched up Halle Berry, don't put that on your resume as you being the one who did the makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do, trust and believe it will be found out. There's been so many, I've heard so many stories, and you've even experienced this yourself, where someone said they did the makeup when you were the one who really did the makeup, you know, and there's been times when people have been sitting in interviews trying to get a job, you know, and have been asked about the work that they've done on their resume.
Right.
And You don't know who producers know. You don't know if the film that, you know, this person was working on, the film that the person is interviewing for, the producer that they may be interviewing with, you know, may have a friend who was the producer of the movie where you said you did Halle Berry's makeup. So there's always a way of somebody checking. And a lot of times for producers, they're not necessarily concerned about how great you are as a makeup artist. I mean, don't get it wrong. You need to be good at what you do. But a lot of times it's also about, you know, when you're working with a A-lister like a Halle Berry, they're going to want a certain type of person, you know what I mean, to be able to work with this particular type of actress. So, of course, you know, they're probably going to ask questions, and they're going to look at your resume, and they're going to want to know references. And so that's also important. Have a list of references. And it's not your girlfriend that worked on the movie with you, you know what I mean, that you give her name as a reference.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to be very careful about what you say on your resume. You may as well speak the truth. And if putting the truth on your resume only means you have one or two jobs on there, then let that be it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the thing, and when you're talking about references, you know, they must be professional references, producer, you know, unit production manager, production supervisors, former bosses, whether it's in another industry, you know what I mean? If you're a former accountant, a former manager, use that person as a professional reference. You know, they can speak to your character. They can speak to your work ethic. But, you know, your girlfriends, no, I wouldn't do that. A former department head that you've worked with, that's not your friend. But you can't, you know, if they ask for personal references, then you can use your friends. But when they ask for professional references, then we're talking, you know, again, producers, directors, you know, people like that, people who have hired you in the past. Again, not your friends. Say that for personal. And then, and even when you give personal references, I really wouldn't even give a friend. I would give, you know, I mean, it could be a friend, but let it be a friend that's not like a, you know, a really close friend who's working in the same industry as you. You know what I mean? Somebody who's totally unrelated to what you're doing.
Right. So true.
Again, yeah, so let me go back to websites because that was another thing that I wanted to kind of single out and talk about again. Again, I think everyone should have their own website. Again, even if you only have 5 pictures to put on your website, that's all you need. Some people have often asked, you know, about portfolios and needing portfolios. You know, portfolios are great for, you know, if you're doing print work, fashion, things like that. For film and television, I've had people to ask me for portfolios, and I just tell them I don't have a portfolio, I have a website. So they can go out to your website, they can view your work. I like to have as much, you know, work of me on film and television sets, the actual work that I did on film and TV, getting actual pictures from the actual shows to put on my website so they can actually see how the makeup actually translated on, you know, on the camera. And not, and also listing, you know, also having, you know, print work or whatever, headshots and everything else on there so that they can see that you can do makeup,
But then I also have that television and film section so they can see how that makeup actually looks. That's very important. Sometimes you can't necessarily get those types of photos from the productions, but if you can, it's always great to have that on your website. For those people who cannot afford a website, there are some free services out there that you can build your own website. You know, when you're just starting out, it doesn't have to be so fabulous. Do what you can until you can do better. If there's nothing out there that's suitable to your taste, a lot of people like to ask if they can use their Instagram pages or their Facebook pages and things like that. This is what I say about that. If you absolutely have to use your Instagram page or your Facebook page, then I would create an account totally for photos of my work. I wouldn't have it with my my personal Instagram pages or personal Facebook page, totally separate, so that when you're being interviewed and someone asks to see your photos, if you don't have a website, you can tell them, I have a separate page for my work, totally separate from my personal page. And you can present them with that so that they can check out your work. Whether or not it's acceptable or not, who knows? Most of these producers, all they want to see is, can she do the work? You know, there some of them aren't really, you know, looking at whether or not it's a Facebook page or it's an Instagram page. Some of them may look at it and think to themselves, wow. But some of them just want to know that you have photos, that you have pictures of your work. Sometimes that's the determining factor between you getting hired and someone else getting hired. So present your work in a professional manner at all times. That's basically what I'm saying here. Present your work in a professional manner at all times. If you can't do it with a professional website, then you can do it through your social media accounts, but keep it separate. Keep a separate one for your work. Let's just take Instagram, for instance. You know, keep a separate one for your photos. When you post those photos, please be very specific on what it is. If it's from a television show, be sure to list the television show, list the production company, list the director who directed that particular television show, list your name as the person who did the work. If you want to list the person who did hair, list that under there. If you want to list wardrobe, you can list that under there, but be very professional about it, very specific as to who did the work, as to what it is. And then, you know, you post in that particular manner so that everything – so when if a producer were to go to this particular Instagram page, they could just continuously scroll through and just look at the work. The focus will always be the work because everything will be lined up the same. Everything will be in a professional manner, detailed in a professional manner. So after they go through two or three pictures, they're like, okay, this is a professional page, and they're constantly focused on – okay, can she do the work? Can she do the work? Can she do the work? They shouldn't have to go to a page where they see you out at the club one night and then a post of your makeup work the next. You know what I'm saying? It should all be professional. So keep it totally separate from your personal pages. On your personal pages, remember that this page represents you. People can find you from anywhere. Unless you make these accounts private, people can find you. They can see who you are based on what they see in those photos. If you're trying to get work and trying to keep a job, please continue to keep your personal pages as professional as possible. You know, as clean as possible. But again, that determines your character. If that's not you, then, you know, your page can look like whatever it's going to look like. But if you want a job in this industry, I suggest you to keep it professional. Absolutely. Being professional is key. And that's one of the things that I wanted to mention earlier. I said I had some do's and don'ts, and I gave you the don'ts. And one of the do's is to be professional. That is key because, you know, you've heard people say that 99% of the time in this business, it's about who you are and your personality. You know, a part of what we do is about, a small part of what we do is about our skill and our craft. And so one of the do's is that we would want to educate ourselves, take classes, go to school, and get all the knowledge that we can, read books, you know, watch, you know, videos from reputable educators. But also practice on your family, practice on your friends, get as many jobs as you can. That's practice. Go and work at the department stores at the makeup counters. That's practice. Get as much practice as you possibly can. It's about your talent, but it's also about who you are. Being very professional, being very nice to people. And, you know, your character goes a long, long way, not just in film and television, but just in life. You know, your character, who you are, goes a long way. You know, when being very honest, being professional, and also being visible. And when I say being visible, I just mean a couple things. One, if you're required to be on set, then be on set. This has a lot to do, like you were saying earlier, maybe about, you know, with set etiquette, but be on set if you're required to be on set. Now, you don't want to be on set and be visible in a way where you're in the way, but you want to be on set and be seen by those who need to see you, you know. The actors that you're touching up need to see that you're there. The rest of your department need to see that you're there. You know, if you need to go to the bathroom, then you need to tell someone, I need to go to the bathroom. So that way, when it's time for work to be done, they understand that they may have to do something different because you're away at the bathroom. So now that I've gone and touched my people, I probably have to go and touch up yours as well. So just being very, you know, being you know, visible, just making sure that you are at the right place at the right time when you need to be there, not off. Just because we have, it'll take 10 minutes to turn the camera around, you know, you don't be gone 10 minutes because it may not take that long. So you're going to want to always be checking on, you know, that time and paying attention to that time. So if they say, oh, 10 minutes, well, you're going to be doing touch-ups before 10 minutes. So you're going to, you know, so you want to always be aware of time and being aware of what's going on set. Don't take that 10 minutes and walk away where can't anyone see you and go get on the phone. Because once you get involved in a conversation, you kind of lose yourself a little bit and kind of forget what's going on around you. So you want to always be aware, alert, and very visible where people can see you, especially those that need to see you. I'm sorry, you had something to say?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, okay, I thought you had something to say.
I do. I was just waiting for you to finish.
Okay. Also, one of the things that you do want to do as a makeup artist, people tend to look at us like as the very creative people, and they think that that's all we know how to be is creative. But my sister and I, we started off as business people. We both have backgrounds in business and accounting. So we're not just creative people, but we're business people as well. And so that's what we have to learn how to be as makeup artists. When you decide you want to be a makeup artist in film and television, you have to know business. And I don't mean
go, you need to go study business or anything like that, but you have to become a business person for yourself. You have to learn how to be able to handle your own business for yourself. And part of that is filing taxes, knowing what you need to do to prepare for tax time, knowing, you know, as a freelance makeup artist, what receipts you need to keep, you know, what tax forms you need to file, what you can deduct, what you can't deduct. So many people try to deduct their clothing. Well, we wear all black, and I had to go out, you know, and I went out and I bought black jeans and black tops and, you know, all these things that you really like and want to wear. No, that is not a uniform. So, you know, it's just learning the things that you can and cannot do. And the important thing about the taxes is that no matter what you tell your accountant or no matter what you tell the tax preparer, the burden of truth is on the taxpayer. So if the IRS decided they wanted to audit you, it's not going to fall on your accountant or you know, the tax, whoever prepared your taxes. That's going to be on you. So it's just about, you know, learning those things and being smart about those things. Yes, this is a fun and creative business, but you also have to be about your business.
Right. And what I was about to say a few minutes ago was that we have to remember that this is a business. Being a makeup artist in film and television, it is a business. So you have to handle yourself like it's a business. So it goes back to being professional, but it also goes back to, you know, when you're in business, whether you're in business for yourself or you're working for someone else, in order to do the job, you have to make sure you're prepared. You have to make sure you're prepared. When you're interviewing for a job, you want to make sure, number one, before you apply, that you're qualified to do the job. So in order to be qualified, you have to know what you're doing. So if you want to be a makeup artist in film and TV, first learn how to be a makeup artist. Like you said earlier, practice, practice. You know, study your craft. If you want to be a makeup artist in the film and television world, study that. You know, when you go to the movies, well, that's the thing. Maybe you don't go to the movies, but now you need to start going to the movies, or you need to start watching as many movies as you can, whether it be on, you know, television or whatever. You need to start watching more film, watching more TV. When those credits roll, look to see who the makeup artists were. Look to see how the makeup was done in each of these shows. You know, when you see who that makeup person, you know, was on that show, take that name. Now that everybody knows about IMDb, go to IMDb, do a search on that person or Google that person, find out what else they've worked on, study that person. Go back to the projects they've done and look at the makeup on those shows. You know, reach out to that person via social media if you want to. You know, make sure you just kind of, you know, bury yourself into the whole world of film and TV. Get to know it. Understand it. Because in order to move, you know, further up in the industry, in order to get that experience in the industry to put on your resume so that you can get more jobs, you know, you have to know who the key players are. Even if, you know, you're doing like an independent film, if you're working on a web series, any of that stuff, you need to know how to go out to get those jobs. You need to know where to look. But you got to get connected as well. You know, whenever you're doing somebody's makeup, even if you're doing a bride's makeup, always let people know what it is that you want to do, where it is that you want to go in your career, because you never know who knows who. You never know what people know or who they know. You never know what bit of information you can tell someone that will help propel you to the next level. But if you really want this industry, you have to go after this industry. You can't sit back and sit around and expect someone to give you all of the information
to get in, because once you get in, what are you going to do with it? That's why you have to be prepared. Everybody wants what they want. You know, when they want it, they want everything quickly. But you better make sure you're ready for it. If it comes quickly, you have to be ready. So prepare yourself now. Do the work. Do makeup on anybody for anything. Just do the work. And you will get yourself to that point of, again, like I said, you know, you may work on a web series. You may work on a commercial, you know, an independent film. You know, there are tons of students out there who are working on their little short films. Go after those jobs. And then go after the indie projects, because I promise you, those are the projects you want to get on so that you can really get your skill to where it needs to be. Once your skill is where it needs to be, anything goes at that point. But you got to be prepared. You know, you can't automatically assume nowadays that you can have a basic beauty kit and that's going to get you through, because it's not. Nowadays, you have to have some basic knowledge of special effects, and not just being simple out of the kit effects. I'm not talking prosthetic pieces and all that. I'm just talking simple out of the kit effects, where you can do a scratch, a simple scratch, a simple bruise. You know, you can do a black eye, just based on what you have in your kit. Like, you should have, you know, a bruise wheel in your kit. You should have, you know, stipple sponges in your kit, not just beauty blenders and regular wedges. You should have a stipple sponge in your kit. So if you need to create, you know, some kind of bruise or black eye or make a scratch, those are simple, easy things that you can just do with a little bruise wheel or a little blood. You can just do simple effects. That will carry you a long way. If you don't know anything about a prosthetic piece, at least you can do some out-of-the-kit effects. That will get you the job. Because more than likely, when some of these projects require very detailed special effects, they're going to have a special effects team. So that wouldn't be you anyway. It's great if you know how to do that stuff. That makes you more marketable. Then, I mean, that's wonderful. But if you don't, definitely have a basic knowledge of just some, again, out-of-the-kit effects. So in your kit, you should have a bruise wheel. You should have some blood. You should have some stipple sponges. You should have some kind of like a jelly blood or some kind of scab blood so that you can make like old scratches and things like that. Have something to make scars with. You know, just simple things like that that'll get you by for basic things. If you're on set and the director wants somebody to have a cut or something, or, you know, like a scratch that's bleeding a little bit, you should be able to just pull that out of your set bag. That shouldn't be something that you have to run back to the makeup room or the makeup trailer to get. That's just something that's standard in your set bag. Basic stuff. Again, if you want to get into this business, you have to go after it. You have to know what skills are needed to be a part of this business. And I'm telling you, just basic simple effects is right there in line with just a basic beauty makeup. I haven't even gotten to, you know, old age makeup or ball caps or things like that. But just basic simple effects is so necessary. And I think that's a great place for makeup artists wanting to be in this business. That's a great place for you to start, is right there. Go out, you know, buy, even if you got to go to like a costume store and get a little basic kit that has like a bruise wheel and things like that, you know, get that stuff and practice with it. There are tons of resources out there. You have the internet. Get on Google and research. Look for basic, you know, video instructions or like books, things like that. Go to the bookstores. Now, I know YouTube is out there. There's a bunch of information out there on YouTube. Some of it comes from professional makeup artists, and some of it just comes from people who like to do stuff. You know, I suggest you go with the videos that are done by professional makeup artists, and I say that only because professional makeup artists who are doing these videos more than likely are in the film and television industry, so they know what looks good on camera. Sometimes you can have somebody who just likes to do special effects, who will do things, but their methods are a little old. And it's not, you know, it's not current, and it doesn't work with what's going on today in film and TV. So that's why I said, you know, follow the videos from the professional makeup people, because they know what's current, they know what looks good on HD, and they're using up-to-date methods. So I encourage anybody out there who's just starting out to do just that. You know, look at the YouTube videos from professional artists. You know, subscribe to Makeup Artist Magazine. You know, that's all about film and television. Subscribe to Makeup Artist Magazine. You know, go online, Amazon, Google, research, find the books, find the DVDs, and study. Study. And just take it one thing at a time until you perfect it. You know, your scratches, your bruises. I've seen people in the industry who's been in the industry for a long time who still, you know, can't do a decent black eye. Then you see people who come along who think a black eye is supposed to be black. And that's not the case. You have to really study and research the stages of bruising to understand what a black eye is supposed to look like at each stage of when a person first gets hit, you know, after a couple of days of healing, and then towards the, you know, and towards the end of ending stages of the black eye. You know, you should be able to create a black eye, even, you know, if you have to carry a black eye through on a film or television set for like a couple of days, of script days, you should be able to carry that black eye all the way through from the beginning to the end. But you have to research that and study that. It's not just about, oh, he got hit, let me do a little purple up here and a little red. You know, you have to understand what it's supposed to look like and from the very beginning all the way through. And that's the thing. You know, this business is all about creating characters. So you got to understand different things about different characters. A character could be a monster. A character could be, you know, a high school teacher. What does that look like? And that's what you create. It's not just about going in and beating somebody's face and making them look good and my job's done for the day. No, you have to understand what real people look like, what the skin of real people look like, and that's what you create. Sometimes people think film and television, when they see people on film and TV, they think, oh, wow, it looks like she did her makeup herself. Well, that's harder, making someone look like they did their own makeup. It may translate on screen like she hardly has anything on. But eye to eye, she can have a ton of makeup on. But for HD, it needs to look a lot softer. It needs to be well blended. And for television, depending on what type of television show it is, it needs to look like real skin. So again, we're creating characters. We're not just beating faces. We're creating characters. So that could require anything. So think about how much more you have to know as a film, television, makeup artist than most other people who are in the makeup industry. So you just have to get your skills. You have to get your skill level up. You really do. You have to think about different time periods. You know, whether it's, you know, we're in 2016. I mean, 1990 is a period. It's a period in the past. You know, we can't just think about period makeup as being 1940s, 1930s, 1960s. You know, 1980s is a period, 1970s, 1990s. It's not the current period, so we should know all of those periods. If you don't, it's not a crime that you don't know them, but have, you know, study them. Go back and research them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, sometimes one of the hardest periods for me is like the 1970s, because it's like, well, if you're growing up in the 70s and you didn't really pay, like you noticed certain things about makeup and eyeshadow, but you really didn't, you know, if you didn't study that time period, then you may not really know that time period very well. So it's nothing to go back to study that time period. Research. That's what the internet is for. Research. There are tons of resources out there. You have to go find them. You have to go get them. But the internet is right at your fingertips. Research. That's the first place you start. If you don't know, start online. You have to be creative in using the resources that are given to you. And this is just all about how to break in. This has nothing to do with once you get in what you have to do.
That's right.
Because there's tons of things once you get in. I'm trying to get you prepared to get in. And doing and all of this studying prepares you. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, just because you know you can do makeup, you don't know if it's going to be good for film or TV. Sometimes you don't know until you get that actor in front of you and you start doing their makeup and you see them on camera. Once you see them on camera, then you know whether it's good or not. Then you make your adjustment. You know, you make your adjustments from there. And then now you know, and now you learn. Now you know what you have to do, or, you know, what more you have to add to the makeup or take away from it. Sometimes you won't know until you get in. That's why when people say, well, you know, when they want to see demos of a television makeup, to sit somebody down and do somebody's makeup and say it's a television makeup, it really makes no sense to me. You have to get them in front of a camera. And if you're not doing that, you're just doing a makeup. It could be good for a lot of things. But
that's
I just
so
encourage
true.
everybody to get their kits in order. You know, having a basic beauty kit along with some extra items for simple out of the kit effects. And that's what I mean by out of the kit effects. Just have some simple, you know, simple materials and products just to do simple things like black eyes and a bruise or, you know, or a scratch, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Basic, simple.
Right. That's right.
And we'll, you know, we'll be talking more about this later this week on Periscope. But
mm-hmm.
make sure you check out our weekly Periscopes and our monthly tweet chats. And you can hear more from us on film and television makeup, how to get in, what to do when you're in, how to break down a script, set etiquette, and everything else that goes along with it.
Are we doing that from the Beauty Talk Periscope page?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me go back. You will find that you can find it from the Beauty Talk page, and you may also find it from our individual pages. So you have to just, you know, we'll post it on the Beauty Talk Facebook page is where we'll post. And we'll also
right.
post the announcements on the Beauty Talk Instagram. But we'll tell you can find us if it's on
okay.
The Beauty Talk page, or if it's one on one of our individual pages. And you can follow our Periscope page by following us on Twitter and Periscope at @beauty_talk. And then on Instagram, you can follow us at @beauty_talk_media to make sure you're getting that information. And on Facebook, we're Beauty Talk Online Radio.
Absolutely. Well, we have gone past our time, so we thank you guys for tuning in. We hope you got something out of tonight's show. As always, you can email us any questions that you may have from the show. You can email us at beautygirlsmedia@gmail.com. You can also leave your questions on the Beauty Talk Online Facebook page, and we can get your questions answered as well. And my sister just gave out the Twitter handle, so you can always put your question out there as well, and we'll be sure to get back to you with an answer. Again, thank you for joining us and tuning in with us tonight, and also check back with us again next week, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll be back with another great topic, another great guest. Okay, and so until next week, everyone have a beautiful and blessed week, and have a wonderful night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.